Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. If you are a resident of Alnwick-Haldimand Township, your taxes will be going up about 4%. At least, that was what politicians were told at a special budget meeting earlier this week. It could change. A number of reports are still being written and will be submitted to council. That means politicians could open up the budget again for amendments. But for now, the rate is set. For one township resident, this is a disappointment. Christine Williams-Calidat has led a campaign to ignite interest in the 2026 budget. She wrote a letter to council on January 7th, raising multiple questions and concerns. She has never received any answers from politicians or staff. It was never included in a meeting agenda. She also led a vigorous social media campaign to raise awareness amongst taxpayers. In this interview, she says the outcome of the budget deliberations will not affect her efforts to hold council and staff accountable. Listen to this interview and decide whether you agree with her or not. I'm so pleased to have with me today Alnwick-Haldimand Township resident Christine Williams-Calidat. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you for having me.
You have been very active these days on Facebook regarding the Alnwick-Haldimand 2026 budget. Why is that?
It's been about a year that I started to get involved in civic municipality affairs, all because of a traffic study being done in front of my house. And when the report came out, I found errors with the numbers, and that's what has started me on the path to where I am today.
Why do you feel you need to rally residents?
Because I think that in order for there to be change, there needs to be electoral consequences, that people need to get off the couch and be a part of the change rather than just sit and complain about it. I think that you need to be an active member in your community if you want to make it better.
You wrote a letter to council dated January 7th, raising concerns about the 2026 budget deliberations. I'd like to go over aspects of that letter and flesh out what was said. Why did you feel, first of all, it was necessary to write a letter directly to council?
Because my emails with questions weren't getting answered. I thought that the proper protocol would be to bring my concerns to council first, because I was complaining about things in a social media format. So I thought might as well just send it to them, and I let them know that I'm sharing my findings and my questions with the community.
You said you sent emails prior to the official letter. How many emails did you send?
I you know what? I don't know the exact, probably five or six on various matters. And sometimes I got the response that said that they are experiencing a high number of emails and that they will get back to you on a priority basis. Sometimes if they did answer, it wasn't answering the question at hand. And even at the public meeting, I've asked for better clarification on how to get information. I was having a heck of a time going through the Freedom of Information process. So I'm just trying to figure it out and try to do it properly.
You mentioned the Freedom of Information process. Did you file an FOI request?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I showed up on November 14th with my Freedom of Information filled out, ready to pay my $5. And I met with the deputy clerk. And I was told that based on the information that I was asking for, that I did not need to submit a Freedom of Information. But they took my Freedom of Information so that they could get my information and send it back to me. 3 weeks after that, on December 8th, I received an email that they were incorrect, that I indeed needed to come in and pay the $5. So what I have found that they have 30 days from the time that you put your Freedom of Information in. So no longer was November 14th the trigger date because I didn't pay. So when they informed me on December 8th, I was overseas on vacation, so I couldn't pay it until December 18th. So I paid it the $5. So in their mind, that's what triggered the 30 days. But then in January, they sent me another letter saying that I had to come in and pay $22.50 for the expense of printing me out the general ledger. And I am happy to report that I just got my Freedom of Information a few days ago. So it took until November 14th to get it.
Going back to the January 7th letter then, did council receive it in their agenda package?
So what I did is I first emailed it to the mayor because I was told that if you want a response, it's got to go to the mayor. And then, because I had sent it to the clerk, I think. But again, it's hard to find what the proper protocol is. So then someone told me that if I resend it and ask for it to be presented at council, that they are duty-bound to do that. But I haven't received a response personally.
It hasn't shown up in the agenda packages to date.
Correct. And I don't know if there's a time frame. Like, I don't know the protocol. So
before we get into the nitty gritty, can you tell us a bit about yourself? How long have you lived in Alnwick Haldimand?
It will be 5 years this spring summer I've retired out here.
And have you ever engaged council before the traffic study that you mentioned earlier? Had you been active at all in attending public meetings or showing up or watching council meetings?
No. It was a move out here. It was, I got married. My mother-in-law was in end of life at doing her hospice here at home. So I was pretty busy. So, now my life has changed and I've got the time and the opportunity to get more involved. But the traffic study was the first thing that was really affected me personally. And so that's what really got me involved.
Have you ever run for municipal office?
I have not.
Are you planning to run for this year's municipal election?
Not, I don't think this year is in my wheelhouse, but I am starting on Tuesday. I'm taking that free course that's available through the government that says, if you're interested, because I'm the type of person that I can't get enough information. So I might as well learn more about municipal government and how it works. Whether I run or I don't run, it's going to help me as a resident. You never know.
Let's go back to your letter. Now, you begin with concerns around the asset management plan. This is a document that looks into all the infrastructure within the township. That would include roads and bridges, culverts and buildings, just to name a few of the things that would be covered. Now, the letter states that the total deficit in this area, if you were to upgrade everything that needed to be upgraded, would be just over $27 million. You say the report does not reflect the true picture. How did you reach that conclusion?
It's within their own report. It says that they were not given the numbers for the buildings. And I think to date, we still haven't done an actual asset management plan of the buildings, like what their current status is, what truly needs to be done. That still hasn't been done. So they had to do a different type of calculation, which in their own report says is not as reliable. So I think that number is actually higher.
Most people wouldn't know what an asset management plan is. Why is it significant to get those additional numbers around the buildings? What is that going to contribute to council and to your own knowledge about what needs to be done?
Well, it talks about what our infrastructure is, which is our buildings, our roads, our parks, and everything has a lifespan. So the arena, the buildings, the roads, and what the study is saying is we haven't done a good job of putting money aside so that when these assets get to their end of life, we have the money to replace or repair them to extend their life expectancy.
So I understand in the report, it talks about the township's paying about $1.4 million currently, but it would need to double that if it hopes to catch up with the demand over the next 10 years. Why is that?
I'm not sure that that number is even accurate to date. That was from 2021. And I think after that, we've only implemented a 2% levy for infrastructure last year and this year at $170,000 a year. And their own strategy says that we should be adding an additional 5% levy on top of the property tax levy for 10 years just to dig ourselves out.
Okay, then why is that not good enough to consider the tax base within the township? I mean, why should they charge more and drive the taxes up? Why is that going to be a good strategy when you're talking to people who already feel that they're being overtaxed?
Well, then we won't have the infrastructure to rely on. We're going to close all of our buildings. They're going to sell them off. Because we've done such a poor job up until today, we're going to have to make the sacrifice for the next 10 years. And that's why this election is so important to help to turn things around.
Fair enough. But if I was a senior living in my home and I'm on a fixed income and limited resources, you often hear people talk about getting taxed out of their homes because they're so high. What would you say to those people that would justify what you're advocating for?
Well, I think there's even a bigger picture, and that is on top of not funding our infrastructure, we haven't reduced our expenses. I think some hard decisions need to be made because we're paying 5% levy increase right now. And if we cut expenses, it would offset the levy increase needed for the infrastructure.
I appreciate what you say, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes, but I'd like to go back to my question. Let's remember those people who are on fixed incomes or feel that their taxes are too high already. What would you say to them that justifies taking this new tax increase on?
I don't want to have to do it. But that's where, as a community, we really need to come together and make some really tough decisions. Because the money's got to come from somewhere. I'm not sure I have the answer.
You also raise concerns in the letter about the capital reserves, saying that they are critically low. Yet if the township, again, were to raise taxes to funnel them into the reserve accounts, don't you think residents would be equally upset? I guess we're coming back to the same issue.
Absolutely. Before we move on, can we jump back to the asset management plan for a second? Because there's a really key aspect of the asset management plan that I don't think the public realizes. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the asset management plan is a legislated requirement, a new legislated requirement. And there were three phases that we as a township were responsible for implementing. Phase one had to be done by 20. We've completed phase one. Phase two had to be completed by 2024 and phase three by 2025. And we have not completed phase two or phase three. We are getting a lot of funding. They're saying that they have until 20, it's a 5-year implementation plan. No, they've missed the dates. And I don't think that they've let the province know and ask for an extension. Other municipalities have done that. So, and my concern is that our funding is gauged to whether or not we've been compliant. So in 2024, we received $877,000 on the assumption that we are doing phase two and phase three. So I don't know if we're either telling the government we're doing it and we're not, or the government just isn't following through to make sure that we've completed it. So to me, it's a big risk, and it could affect funding, putting us even more on the negative. So
for people who may not understand, it's my understanding that the asset management plan has to be done before anybody can apply for provincial funding.
Because there's phases 1, 2, and 3.
I understand that, right. but there's a correlation between receiving grants and having an asset management plan. If you don't have an asset management plan, it becomes a lot tougher to get provincial dollars to build a new arena or fix a road or dig a new well.
Correct. So, and I think how do we keep taxes low? I don't think that we are doing a good enough job in applying for grants that are out there. We don't have a dedicated person. It's a lot of work. And our financials make that even more difficult to secure funding. So it's a catch-22. It's like we're just going around in a circle.
You also raised issues with the operating budget, arguing that staff received a 4.8% increase when you say the cost of living is going above 5%. Where did you get those figures and why is that concerning?
They passed a COLA, which is a cost of living increase policy. And then that was at 3%. And then in 2024, they changed it to 5%. And what that means is that if the cost of living goes above 5, that they can bank the overage and put it to other years. But there's no contingencies tied to this COLA that, you know, we if we have to raise taxes, they don't get the COLA. Or if we don't hit a certain number in our reserves, they don't. It just seems like every year they're getting the COLA increase. And yet council could vote not to. So it comes back to the hard decisions again. You want to raise our taxes, sell our parks, close our community centers, but continue to give yourselves cost of increase. I just want hard questions to be answered.
The upgrades to the Memorial Arena in Grafton is highly controversial. Council approved a $3.7 million arena retrofit. There's an ongoing lively debate about how this will be paid for.
Correct.
You call for secured funding yet no final decisions have been made, from my understanding.
Correct.
There is a lot that is being discussed. Why are you so impatient to get this resolved?
Well, if you look on the 2026 budget under revenue, they've put the fundraising of 3.75 under revenue. And to put that is not a very good accounting best practices because it's unfunded. What happens if we don't get it? But they've also put it in the capital line beside it. But nothing's been approved. There's nothing in the budget to pay for the retrofit. So what happens if the fundraising doesn't hit its goal? And if they start in March, do they have enough revenue to start the project? Going ahead with a capital project without secure financing isn't common sense to me.
There's been a number of scenarios that have been debated. You alluded to one of them, and that was disposal of some properties that the township owns. Can you describe for listeners what that has involved and what has been the community response?
Absolutely. So there's been talk for a number of years of decommissioning Fenella Hall and Vernonville Community Center. And there was a public meeting. And when I say the community showed up, they showed up. And I learned things that I didn't know, that the Fenella community, the gentleman whose family donated the land that it sits on was there. Men that worked to build the building were there. It didn't cost our municipality anything for that arena. It was built by the community. And they want to decommission it to try to save costs, yet it only cost $16,000 to run the arena. I mean, the community center last year. And they spent that in going to conferences. So maybe it's more about optics, but what are the priorities? That's more my question to council.
Well, my question to you then is, you were just talking a moment ago about making some hard decisions.
Correct.
Isn't this a process of making hard decisions?
Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. If that is the right decision, that is the right decision. But you can't say that out of one side of your mouth while giving yourself COLA increases. And I don't know the exact number, but if you look in this budget, salary and benefits have gone up $1 million to 4.8 million. We only bring in just over 8 in property taxes. How can you give yourselves $1 million increase in salary and benefits, but then also want to sell off community centers? You should do all you can from the top down. And then if it makes sense to sell the community centers to keep this municipality afloat, then you'd make that decision. But I don't think it's the first decision.
To replace recreational facilities, which includes the arena, it represents up to nearly $8.5 million. Is it not better to go with a retrofit rather than trying to build a new facility?
I'm not against the retrofit. I would love to keep the arena. I go skating there all the time. But there's no financial plan to support it. And maybe, would it be better served if we turned it into a indoor soccer, or they've just been so focused on just an arena. And how long, if we do this retrofit, we don't even know what the end number is going to be. Because if we have to finance it, then we've got to think of interests. And what's our return on investment for a retrofit of an outdated arena? There's just too many questions for me to move forward with it.
You can imagine some listeners who might be listening to you now who have kids or family members or are users of the arena and want to have a local place to enjoy activities. When you raise the issues, they might be concerned that they will lose the arena and lose what they have that they see as being an important and integral part of the community. What do you want to say to those people?
I look at the numbers. Our demographic is 48% of the population is 50 and over. Children make up a very small percentage of our municipality. And when you look at the prime ice time, it's not being rented by our residents. It's being rented by the communities outside of our municipality. So yes, I feel bad. I grew up a figure skater. I know how important an arena is. But if you look at it from the numbers, it doesn't make sense. But I'm also a big proponent of keeping the infrastructure for the community, libraries, community centers, arenas going, because they're community hubs. They're what bring us together. So I don't have the answers. But when I look at the numbers, I'm not sure it justifies it.
Speaking of numbers, you seem especially concerned about the use of development charges for the retrofit. Now, development charges are supposed to be paid by those who are building subdivisions, et cetera, for additional or new facilities, infrastructure, and so on, as a population increases. Why is that not a good use to help pay for the retrofit rather than an entirely new facility, which would be way, way more money?
Again, I didn't know much about development charges. And so I've just been going onto the government websites and reading the legislation. And it's very clear about what development charges can be used for. And that is for new development based on growth. And there's a lot of exclusions, and retrofitting existing buildings and infrastructure is usually excluded. Or if you can use development charges, it's a very small percent. But again, they haven't produced any numbers or done an analysis on how much of the development charges could be used. But the legislation says it can't be used. So it just leaves me with more questions. But we're moving forward with it anyway, even though we don't have the answer. Do you see my conundrum? There's too many what ifs.
You question the fiscal priorities of council. We've already talked about a number of things. You have already mentioned that travel expenses and conferences are one area to save, and that's mentioned in your letter.
Correct.
Council conferences, training, mileage, and so forth in the budget from last year was $15,000. So for five people, it would be about $3,000 a piece. How is that too much?
Again, it's more optics that every senior manager and council gets $3,000 a year and all other employees get $2,000 a year. That's from me reading the policies that I can find online. And I'm just saying that for the next 10 years, the next 5 years for sure, we just have to cut off all the wants and focus on the needs. And like the most recent training, the Roma, they were there last week. There were three counselors, the mayor, the CAO, the clerk, and the HR, all at the same conference. But when I read the conference policy, it talks about, you know, the person that goes to the conference, when they come back, they do a presentation on what they've learned. And that's the environment that I came from in corporate, where one person goes, collects all the information, and brings it back. Did we need to have seven people at the conference last week in Toronto?
You share the letter and similar information on social media. We talked a little bit about that earlier. Yeah. What type of response are you getting from other residents?
I would say 90% have been so supportive, like-minded, and that's my goal, is to get awareness out there, to get people involved, and to try to implement change in the next election. And then there's the 10% who don't agree with me. So, fair.
You are just one person. Are there any efforts by residents to take a more collective action rather than just one person like yourself?
Absolutely. There's a movement growing. And There's a group of us that are working on projects, and there's other groups forming to try to do some fundraising for Finella. You know, this is really bringing the community together, I think, in a very positive way.
We are talking before a special budget meeting on Wednesday. What chances are there of any of your suggestions or recommendations will influence what will take place? If you were a betting person, what would you bet?
0%. Unfortunately. And that's what I'm finding with council is that the agenda is already set before it goes in. I call a voting block. I'm not sure if that's appropriate. I'm not sure that there will be any changes.
Once council makes its final decision on the 2026 budget, will you back off or are you going to continue?
I'm going to continue. Why would I give up on the community that I live in?
Christine Williams-Calidat, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for reaching out. It really means a lot.
That was Alnwick Haldimand Township resident Christine Williams-Calidat. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.